successful person got there by going through tough times. Success is a hard-ass teacher who likes to knock you around along that journey. You know, it takes real guts to not give up and keep going. We'll hear stories about failures and how these leaders flip the script to create success. I'm John Schultz. Join me and let's discover how success is never really overnight. So welcome to the John Schultz podcast. I've been doing this now for over 40 episodes to practice for this one podcast. Before I start, I have to say this, you know, Rudy, we're going to talk about to Rudy Rudiger, who's here today, the guest that everyone most likely knows, but has given me amazing motivation in my life. I have a picture in my house of him being carried off the field. And I just think, you know, movies, cinema, stories are what I think motivate all of us. And that was one for me. And it's shaped my life. And I told my wife when I first started this podcast, it'd be a dream to have Rudy on. And I guess you can manifest things in life if you focus long enough. So, Rudy, welcome.
Yeah, and same to you, John. And love to hear what's on your mind, for sure.
Totally. So listen, most people, I don't have to give an introduction to you, but I'm going to because you never know who didn't watch the movie or read about your story. Rudy's a motivational speaker and author. He inspired the 1993 feature film Rudy, where Sean Astin played him. Third of 14 kids. That was the biggest statistic I didn't know about. That's wild. I mean, that's Brady Bunch times three. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Struggled with dyslexia in school, not diagnosed until college. You know, it's amazing how the older generation of people that had dyslexia didn't know about it and had to deal with it and thought things were wrong with them. And the truth is now that it's more out there, people know how to deal with it, which is a good thing. And talking about it's important. Served in the U.S. Navy after high school. And as we all know, and the people that don't, applied to Notre Dame three times before being accepted. Again, Rudy, welcome. And I'm so happy to have you here.
Great. Couple facts. I applied twice at Notre Dame.
Oh, so.
The third time was I just went to see what I had to do to get to Notre Dame.
Okay.
So that was part of the journey of rejection.
Gotcha. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you.
We're basically telling you there's no shot.
That's funny. All right. So stories start from when we're young. My first question is like, you know, obviously we emanate and we find things we want to do. But as a kid, did you really want to play football? Was it just an outlet? Was there any other dreams that Rudy had besides everything that we know about based on the stories that we watch and the movies?
That great question. I think dreams come as you get older and reality comes when you see, wow, why not me? It wasn't the fact I dreamt about going to Notre Dame when I was young. It was fun being that person. When my dad felt wonderful when Notre Dame won. Well, I say that because he worked three jobs and Notre Dame gave him hope when they won. So that kind of gave me the incentive to at least play the part when you're in your backyard with your friends. You do that. I was Jim Taylor for the Packers and Mickey Mantle for the Yankees. So you played your heroes. And as you played your heroes, you find out, I didn't know there was a university of Notre Dame that close to where we live. I thought it was, heaven for God's sakes. That's how they narrated it to you. Special kids go to Notre Dame, special athletes. So my thought process was there's no way, but at least you could play the part. And I think that's what kids do. That's what's fun about being a child. You got to live like a child, but act like an adult. Think like a child, dream big, and don't allow people to, I guess, infiltrate your mindset of, I call goofy thinking. And that's what happens in school. That's what happened with your friends, and that's what happens in church, religion, all that, because they give you doubt and fear throughout your whole life. And that's not fair, in my opinion, when you're in that culture. So you eliminate those cultures, you find out you are somebody, and you find out you're not stupid, and you are a great contributor to whatever you choose to be part of. And that was the key, a contributor, not to be an All-American, not to be a valedictorian, but contribute to something great. And that's where you got to dig in and be part of something, be a good teammate. And I think that's what made it possible.
I love that. You got to think of things bigger than yourself, mm-hmm. right? Because that's right. What gives you that, I think, catapult into what your purpose really will feel like. But also, you know, perseverance comes into play with all this. And how do you balance goofy thinking with perseverance? Because, like, you can do a lot of goofy thinking, and it's, you know, I was just away with my family on a vacation, sure. and I'm yeah. seeing all the young people playing games in the pool, you know, like yeah. I used to, and just using their imagination. And I think you need that goofy imagination thinking. But how did you get this perseverance? Was it that you felt like you had nothing to lose? Like where does that come from?
You said it a little bit right there, nothing to lose, everything to gain. It's like, these kids today, they come home from college and say, well, I think I'm going to go to Europe and I'm going to go find myself in Europe. What? Find yourself. Now, if you say that to your father, when I was growing up, find yourself. They say, find yourself. Look in the mirror, dude. You're fine. There you are. You know, today we think differently, our parents. And you know, we're prone to not be – we're not as tough as – our parents were, let's put it that way. When I say tough, they made you know, they made you do hard work pays off, period. And a lot of kids have that, that have a goal and that want to be somebody and their mindset's right. Athlete, that's why I love sports. And I love people and doctors, lawyers who really want to be somebody. They have to work hard to do that. Whatever profession, whether you're an electrician or auto mechanic, there's certain things you have to learn to be that. And kids, some kids who learn how to persevere through the thoughts that people give them become better at what they do. And I think that's the key. You know, it's like sitting in the classroom and your teachers will only kind of point out the smart kids. Well, what's wrong with me? You know?
Right.
I had problems studying. Didn't have a good night at home. Well, they don't take that consideration. That they just made you feel bad because you didn't fulfill their commitment. And their commitment was really not a solid. It was just a thing to keep you busy instead of developing you. And I think that's where the fallacy came. You want to develop me, or you want to help me, or you're there because you just need to do this because you got to look important. A lot of teachers, coaches, parents never get into that mindset. I'm here to develop you. Therefore, there are some things you got to go through that you got to persevere, and we have to help you through it. So you need mentoring as well. And, you know, instead of, hey, you're stupid, you know, help a kid out if you feel he's not developing the right way. What's going? He's not stupid. You don't put him in a resource room and make him feel stupid. Put him in a room that, hey, I'm going to this room to get help, and I think everybody needs help. If that narrative is put there, kids go get help for a different reason. And we all learn differently, some kids in the classroom and in real life. So I had to learn all these steps by going through the hard steps, going to work after high school, going to the Navy, coming back to work and say, this is not what I want. I see myself at a much higher level than where you're putting me. So that was the challenge. And that's where dreams come. When you dream, you see yourself at a high level. But it's not La La Land. It means hard work. So you got to work hard to keep that dream to where you want it. And I think that's where the difference is. Most people don't work hard to fulfill that dream. And they get around people, give them excuses or people that make them feel bad. Therefore, they don't pursue what they want to do because of that. So it's all about mindset. Never forget speaking to the University of, UCLA, their gymnastics team. I mean, what am I going to talk to them about? You know?
Yeah.
I can't do a flip. It has nothing to do with a flip. I'll ask you what mindset. So just recently I spoke to the University of Michigan gymnastics team, and it's a mindset. It's not a ability to do a flip. It's how you think about what you need to do and what you have to do. It has to do with business or anything. So it's possible to become the person you want to be if you understand what you have to do. So that most people, I say this because it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy for a teacher to go in and teach 40 kids in a class or 30 kids in a class. That's hard because, you know, sitting there all day and you got kids that are going to not want to pay attention. You got kids who want to do the work and you get frustrated because they don't do the work. Some of them do the work. So it's a tough situation for you to be in. So I never learned in the classroom. I learned on the job. I learned doing the work. And that was my secret, I think. I can't learn with a bunch of people who don't want you to win. They're all there competing against you. I don't want to compete against you, dude. You know,
yeah.
I have to compete against myself. And if I learn how to do that, I'll be okay. But everyone teaches you to compete with the other guy. You got to look better than her. You got to look better than him. You got to be smarter than her or smarter. That's where problems come in, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, and the greatest athletes, and again, I think sports, and it doesn't have to be sports. You know, my daughters are in the arts. They do dance and theater. Like being part of a group, being accountable to a group, being a teammate.
Right.
No matter what it is, having those extra responsibilities to get you, you know, really being cohesive with a group of people, I think is so important. And, you know, at the end of the day, most great people are challenging themselves every day to be that little bit better for themselves. And again, you know, comparisons kill. I mean, the minute you're going, and that's outside you, it's the outside stuff. You got to stay within and each day get better for yourself. So you wrote a bunch of books. You had dyslexia. How'd you overcome that? I mean, at the end of the day.
I had a ghostwriter write the books, like just like the movie. I didn't write the movie. Angela Pizzo wrote the movie, but I'm a good storyteller. And I could tell a story. And he could put it into words. He interprets the story, how that would work on the big screen. It's just like when you write a book, they write it in your voice. And I didn't have time to learn all the stuff that they say you need to know to write a book. That's nonsense. I teamed up with people. That's the key, teaming up. Like you said, become part of a team that could help you develop what you need to do. That's the way life is. You can't do this alone. You need help. You need people supporting you. People who are want to do it alone, they waste a lot of time of finding out, man, if I only would have had this help, it would have been better. Yeah, well, let's get help now. You will get better. And by the way, you know, I had teammates like Joe Montana and all those guys, and he still thinks it's a joke that they carried me off the field. Well, it wasn't a joke to me. It could have been a joke to him, right? And just because he won 4 Super Bowls, he doesn't have that right to say that. Because what he's doing, he's dousing other kids' dreams that work hard. Yeah, they could have made a movie out of someone else or him, but they didn't. So I'm not jealous because you won the Super Bowl, dude. I'm happy for you. That's where the narcissism comes in that ruins your ability to communicate with people too. Now, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm just saying, hey, you're an elite athlete. I'm not. Sorry. But I contributed to your success on that football field. And it inspired some. Maybe it didn't inspire you. You're an entitled athlete that feels entitled to this. There's a lot of athletes like that. There's a lot of great ones that become great because they don't feel they're entitled. They work hard. Kobe Bryant's a great example. If you go to his Kobe Bryant USC interview, Rudy, you hear what he has to say about not being entitled. Hard work pays off and getting better each day pays off. And he was inspired by the movie Rudy. So, hey, Joe, sorry. you didn't need me to win 4 Super Bowls. That's no big deal. But, you know, you need people like me to win Super Bowls. Maybe not me, but like me. So he doesn't understand that process about, and it hurt my feelings, but yet I knew he was a jokester. I hear it on the Dan Patrick Show. These are some of the things that you deal with later on in life as people become bigger and better at what they do. And then they it's like doing the movie Rudy. Who do we, look, John Scherer, he's a big star now. He played Johnny in the movie. Vince Vaughn, John Favreau. Hey, Sean, you never had a leading role till I found you on Memphis Belle. Dude, are you kidding? I said, you still would have been that character. You, now you're known for something bigger than, you know, 51st States or whatever. You're known as Rudy. And when you're known as Rudy, they look at you as something special. See, everybody wants to be looked at. And I say that because Rudy represents, not Rudy Rudiger, perseverance, like you said, and not giving up. So when you're tagged with that, that's a good sign. And a lot of people who, and I hear it all the time from people who are, whether you're a cab driver, it's his dream to become a cab driver in Las Vegas. What's wrong with that? You know, or my dream is to do, I hate to say this, but, you know, the guy who started movie series, Survival, was a cab driver in Las Vegas, and I rode in his cab. And I'll never forget hearing his story, but I didn't respond to it because I said, wow, cab driver is going to start a TV series? Very shallow thinking of me. That's because, Rudy, you're not a big shot. You're not a biggity shot, like my dad would tell me. So that's okay. We just need to learn to accept people who have passion for their dreams and reality to their dreams and empower that. That's what it's all about.
So I agree with that. And that's why I'm doing this podcast. I think empowering people, if one person listens to this podcast, I feel it's empowering me as much as them. Because I think the more you're out there giving and empowering, I think the more it energizes us as humans. And, you know, just like you said, with just everything you went through in your life, it's not about you. It was about you being a teammate and part of something bigger than you. Mm-hmm. And I think as a young person, if you stop like worrying about everything that's, you know, going on with your own stuff and you move forward with that philosophy, I think, you know, you'll feel better, first of all. And then the things that are supposed to happen will. But this movie, right? I mean, obviously, yeah. You know, it's so amazing who was in the movie and where they are today. You know, all the different stars, it's, you know, awesome careers. But one of my other favorite movies is Rocky because I just love underdogs. And how many times were you turned down for this thing? Like what was the journey?
It was a turn down. It was get out of our way.
What oh, really?
Are you talking about? You don't walk into Hollywood to make my movie. That doesn't happen. You need someone else to pitch it. But no one wanted to pitch it. So I had to go out and find out how to tell the story. Right? It took 8 years, but it was worth it. Just like speaking for a living. I didn't know how to speak. Or it took me 10 years to learn how to speak. But people allowed me to come and speak it. You know, I talked to kids. Kids taught me how to speak. Go to classrooms, talk to kids. You know, they will tell you whether you're a phony or not. They if you don't get their attention, you're doing something wrong.
So yeah.
If you can get their attention in a good way, then you're doing something right. So my whole point is sometimes you gotta, it's like Major League Baseball. I always use this as an example. They don't put you right into Major League Baseball like you do football. They put you in the lowest league you can get into. Then you got to work your way through and show that you do have that endurance to play baseball and that mindset. So you got to go to the minor leagues. You may go there for 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And there's guys who've been there 7 years and made it, never gave up because they kept, you know, going at it. So my whole point is I like that journey. You got to start where you can learn at the lowest level and work your way through. And you find out a lot about yourself, character and courage and commitment to what you want to do. Because it's so easy to give up when things get hard. But the guys who don't give up, they learn how to persevere. And that comes because you believe in yourself. You believe you can do this. That's where perseverance comes from.
So what was the moment, 8 years, I mean, it's a, you know, talk about that's as perseverance yeah. as you can get. What was that moment that changed? What happened?
Well, it was through common ordinary people that helped me get to the right people. I was out there thinking, boy, I need to find a big shot. You don't need a big shot. You need someone who cares and who knows the right person to go to. And sometimes those people are just regular people who know these people or know where they live or know how to get to them. And hotel manager in South Bend, Indiana, we had my final meeting at Notre Dame for the movie, and Notre Dame was totally against the movie. Not because they didn't believe in Rudy. They already had their movie and their marketing, and Notre Dame's very hard to penetrate. It's like Hollywood, very hard to penetrate. Hey, Rudy, we had a lot of kids like you make it here. I understand. There's better stories at Notre Dame, guaranteed. But I stepped out and said, because of the movie Rocky, I liked the message. I saw all the elements of those messages he created. Second chance guy, preparation, all those little things that were important for that tackle to happen, for that graduation to happen. And all these things made sense. It made sense. A lot of kids are going through this. They just need some encouragement and empowerment. So I didn't make the movie about me. I made it about what everybody goes through. That's where it works. But I used my story as a platform. And sometimes people don't see that right away. But the little guy sees it, that persevered in doing what he's doing. So when my final meeting happened at Notre Dame, they come in and said, we love Rudy, but we're not going to do a movie and we're not interested. Thank you very much for coming. And that was it. And I walked out of the meeting and said, wow. I'll never forget the feeling. It was a feeling of, it was like the door slammed in your face and you can't believe you, all these years and all this preparation, it's just that easy to shut the door in your face. But the door, there's another door that opens, and that's another door there that you never expected. It was a hotel manager that just loved your journey. And he was always talking to you about it and very positive. Then he says, hey, you need to talk to my brother. I've been telling my brother about your story. I said, would you be willing to talk? I said, sure. And I did. He just happened to be the right guy because he was involved in the movie Hoosiers. And he was classmates and fraternity brothers of the guys who wrote and directed Hoosiers. So he got me to the writer. And I get to California because he set up the meeting. And I get there, and he doesn't show up for the meeting. So because he doesn't show up doesn't mean you give up. So all I did was walk out because I sold insurance during this process. I learned, well, if he's not going to come, I'm going to go find him. That was my mindset. And that was not realistic to my friend that was sitting there with me. He said, there's millions of people out here, and you're going to find them? And I said, well, why don't you sit here? Let me do what I need to do. And I walked out. I see a mail carrier All I did was thank him for his smile. He gave me that energy. He gave me positive vibes. And I liked that. And I didn't care anything in that moment. He just made me feel good about what I was doing and what I was about to do. It was go find this writer who stood me up. And he liked me when I thanked him. And he said, wow, no one's ever thanked me for that. I said, wow, I'm thanking you because your spirit, dude. You got a good spirit about you. I love that. He says, where are you from? I says, Indiana. He says, I'm from Michigan. And all of a sudden, there's a connection, Midwest connection. He could be passing this mail out in the rain, snow. He had a little what I call gratitude, and that was very important. So that gratitude kind of shifted to me. And I said, wow. I said, wow. So you're out here fulfilling a dream, passing me. He said, no. It's not that I like, I don't love what I'm doing, but I like what I'm doing because I'm doing something I have to do in order to do what I need to do. But it's sunny out here. So that's gratitude. Absolutely. Sometimes we need to do that. And he said, why are you out here? And I tell him my little 30,000 foot, why I'm out here. He said, wow. And I told him the story and a little bit about it. He said, follow me. That guy that stood you up, I know where he lives. Happened next door. So it takes me to his home. It's only six blocks away. Knocked on the door. Never forget the reaction. Who is it? I said, Rudy. So how'd you find me? I said, never mind, man. You're late for lunch. He started apologizing for standing me up. He said he was up all night rewriting, which whether it was true or not didn't matter. And then he says, look, I'm not going to write another sports story. I don't want to be, you know, pigeonholed out here. It's really hard. You need to do other things to make it out here. I said, I understand. He said, besides, I hate Notre Dame, but you do have a good story. So I just listened instead of reacting. But he did say he liked the story, and that gave me hope. So I left him as a friend instead of an enemy. And 2 years later, he calls me out of the blue. And he got my number from my buddy, his buddy that got me connected with him. And he said, look, man, I just been commissioned to write your story. I said, what? And this was 2 years after we met. And he said, wow, yeah, I'll tell you more about it, but you need to get it all in order because Columbia Pictures wants to get you under contract. Anyhow, we got that all in the contract. And I found out how this happened was that the president of Columbia Pictures went to Michigan State and he wanted a sports movie and a comic relief movie. Now think about the serendipity here. A guy who had $50 million and you're in search of that money to make this movie. But all you had to do was stay course, meet the right people, get you to the right people. Because the right people who don't want to do it, don't know they're the right people, find out they are the right people. When the guy pays them to do the screenplay, why would you turn down a job? You know? So he took the job, took the writing, came out to South Bend. We just sat around and talked for 2 weeks, wrote the story, got green-lighted, ready to shoot. Frank Price, who basically green-lighted the movie, got fired, and the movie's dead now. So there's no more movie. All the excitement, there's no movie. I'll never forget the call I get from the producer telling me the situation. So I got good news and bad news. I said, give me the bad news. He says, we don't have a movie anymore. I said, wow. So the good news is we're going to walk over to TriStar Pictures and we'll get this done. We're going to bring you out here and we're going to talk to Mark Platt and everyone. He's the president of TriStar. So we go and we get them green-lighted again. So that's good. But the other obstacle was that they didn't know that Notre Dame did not want this movie. So I had to go through that process. So it was a whole big process of ups and down. And you get to Notre Dame, you get the approval. Now the athletic department doesn't want any part of this movie. Even though we have 100%, they won't let you shoot where you want to shoot. They don't want you around because you don't represent their elite players. What? You know, and now he struggled with that. But we overcame that because I'm on set telling it, don't worry about those guys. You know, you got a field over here. We'll shoot it. We'll shoot anywhere. But we need the stadium shot. And that's where we went to the band and got permission from the band director to take 8 minutes out of his routine, the last game of the season, so we could shoot the 6 minutes we need to shoot for, because we didn't have CGI, whatever it is at that time. We need 60,000 people. So it was a challenge, but it worked. And we got the NFL films in to film football because the cinematographer didn't know how to shoot football. So he was British guy, Oliver Woody, just passed away, but he allowed us to get the NFL films to come in and shoot it, which was perfect. And everything worked out if we stayed and fought for the right purpose. And even the people on set, we became a family, became united. We fought like a team. We didn't respond negative. We all responded positive because there's another way of doing it. And when you do that, you feel like this is the proper step we should do because it felt right. So it all worked out. The 6 minutes worked out. We put all the band kids in the movie, and that's all he requested, put my kids in the movie. And so we did. And when it happened, the movie turned out great because NFL Films shot it where we wanted it. And the editor was awesome, David Rosenblum. He and Jerry Goldsmith, the movie, music, the composer was wonderful. So everything really worked out. But they only put it in 800 screens, which was all right. But Rudy was not a big box office hit. But today it is because it's like it just took off like a rocket after it got out of the theater. It went to HBO, went to all these little outlets, foreign or domestic outlets. It really took off. And people connected to that. So sometimes it's good to get, I call, in the theaters, but it's better to get it out of the theaters into streaming, into, you know, your other outlets, because millions of people will now see it instead of just hundreds of thousands. So that's where it works. So that's the story of Rudy, how the movie was done. And we got, you know, you look at first-time actors. Jon Favreau was his first movie. John Scherer was his first movie. Vince Vaughn was his first movie. And Sean Astin was his first movie that he got to have a lead. So all these movies that took all these guys were part of this movie.
You know, I know what your next movie should be. It should be a movie about making the movie. I mean, like, because like what's so wild, and, you know, I think people only get what they can handle, is most people that movie would never have seen the light of day. But right, because of like you having confidence of getting through something that was so difficult and uncertain and never happened when you thought it should, when it should, the way it should, you were able to recreate that same energy into making something that has motivated millions of people, started careers, and put you on a track to speaking and doing what you do now. But I've heard in an interview in the past that you said you were not a guy that this, I almost don't feel like saying this, but
no,
you're not a guy that likes to follow through. So how the hell can someone be you? How'd you change that? Was that really something that, you know, was inside you at one time?
How was the question asked about not following through?
I don't remember. It was an interview that you said, you know, you're the kind of person that who didn't usually follow through. And then
I think I can answer that. I quit on certain things and I don't follow through on certain things. I don't follow through on a dead end. And I quit on things that don't make sense. That's staggering me. That's stopping me. It's good to quit on certain things, but you never quit on what you believe in. There's certain things you need to quit on, and there's certain things you need to do. And, you know, like follow through. It's a waste of time to follow through on something of people who just don't believe in you or don't believe in the process. So why follow through with something like that? Get with people that understand why this is important. And, you know, that may just be a handful of people that could turn out to be thousands of people because they have influences and they have ways of influencing people to get you there. So you got to become, I guess, partners with other people and be open to that. You can't do this alone. As you know, your real estate business, you need help with other people. And I'm just saying, I just know, I tell my daughter, just graduated from the Boston Conservatory, and she almost quit the conservatory when she went out to Boston. She didn't realize it's cold. There's snow, there's rain, there's sleet. There's never any sun like Vegas. That's where we live. And she wasn't used to the gray skies. But I said, listen, just get in that classroom, get in that dance class. You won't see the skies. And by the time you finish during the day, keep yourself so busy, you won't see the sun because it's dark out. So just know that everything that you do, you have to, if you want it, just focus it on and dig in and don't worry about, I think, John, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, people who dream big, that are willing to pay the price, that don't look for the obstacles, that handle the obstacles as they come, will succeed because of their character and their courage and their commitment to what they need to do. They got to be willing to change, but don't, the process always changes, but don't change the dream. Now, and don't put a time limit on yourself as well. And that's what people try to put on me as a time limit. You're too old. No, you're not too old if you don't think you're too old. Oh, Rudy, you know, by the time you play football, you'll be 27. Age and time wasn't the difference. It was the fact I had to finish the process. And, yeah, I changed directions, but I never changed the dream. I only wanted to play one moment to show my dad, my family, my friends, it is possible to play for a university like Notre Dame. All you have to do, like 10 years from now, I told them, people don't care whether you won a national championship. Did you play for Notre Dame? Your answer would be yes.
No, I think that, you know, again, you had the nothing to lose attitude. You weren't worried about failure. Failure was actually your friend. It taught you what to do. It kept you motivated. And that's why this story is so inspiring. To end a great interview here, mm-hmm. Is there someone that's inspired you? I mean, I know you were inspired by, you know, wanting to show people that you can do it. All right. That's not. But was there someone that inspired you during your life?
If I wanted to show people you could do it. I wanted to show myself I could do it.
And yeah.
It takes it to that other level.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people, you know, my faith was very important, not the religion, but the faith. Like, I know I'm a child of God. I kept that in line. I tried all the different religions to see what was right. But what's right is God. There's a God and you're not him. So many people act like, you know, they have the answer to this deal. No, there's the only answer is your connection to your spirit and to your, you know, who you believe in. And my parents were very much like that, but they had to learn along the way, having all the children, they changed along the way, you know? And I saw that change, so that inspired me. They had to change, and they were willing to change how they brought up the kids and how they responded to, you know, adversity. So that was inspiring. So I learned by watching other people, like Rocky, the movie Rocky. I just watched another good movie called Warrior.
Yes.
Oh my God. The redemption there was awesome.
Yeah.
And also there was a movie called Southpaw. I love that movie.
Yeah, good one.
All those type of movies because they deliver great messages. There is not many good movies out there. I'm sorry. There's entertaining movies, but not many. That's where I think Rudy was just voted the best sports movie of all time.
Totally.
Right.
Well, and Wahlberg just came out with Father Stu. There's great messages out there.
Yeah.
That if you just got to go out and search for them, right?
Yeah, Wahlberg's a great guy. You know, he had obstacles in his life. Love to meet him someday. He just moved to Vegas. I don't know if I ever will, but he's hard to find.
He's always moving. He's an inspiration too. He's an amazing person. Does so many good things for people. But I love he has a show called Wall Street, which shows all the different business aspects of his life as well. But you're right. He keeps moving. He's always moving. You'll find him.
Where is he at today? You know,
it's true.
But the busier they are, I guess the happier they are. And sometimes I say, hey, guys, why don't you slow down? You don't need all this stuff. You got family, dude. Why don't you focus on the kids? Because, if I ever sat with him and I would say, you don't need all this stuff, you know? You need your wife and your children. That's what I learned. Your kids are so important. You can only live off of so much. And you don't need everything you think you need.
Right.
You know? And what I learned was, man, your kids, you help your kids help your, and I help my ex-wife. I'm the best friends with her. Sometimes it's good not to be married, but be friends. That's what we miss in a marriage, friendship.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah. And I think friendship's the best thing. We get married, all of a sudden we put,
pressures
and controls and everything that's that important. You know, friends are totally different. And boy, we talk about everything. We go to dinner still. We do things. But, hey, and we go our merry ways. And you're happy for her. She's happy for me. And that's a hard one to, put into order. I saw that in a relationship, and I love that guy, how he was doing it. He said, my ex-wife's my best friend. So that's where I want to be.
Yeah, no, listen. Listen, you have your children with her and
My God, yeah.
You gotta get in it and stay with it, no matter what. So Rudy,
it's another deal that we could talk about much later.
I think that's a different podcast, right? That's another podcast. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciate this. Again, I'm so happy I was able to meet you, and hopefully we'll see each other in person soon. Everyone listening to this is going to be very inspired. Hearing the real story of the movie is almost more inspiring. Making the movie is almost more inspiring than the movie itself. I never heard, in that detail. Because 8 years and then, 2 years, you waited for, and then finally get a call and all the uphill battles you had to get to get it done. And, it makes just the whole process more rewarding. So thank you so much.
Yeah, John.
And I appreciate it. And I'll see you soon.
Hey, I like your hairdo, bro.
Thank you. There you go.